Civil rights leader Julian Bond speaking in May at the Vietnam Power of Protest Conference in Washington at the Martin Luther King Memorial. It was one of his last public speeches. Julian Bond died August 15th at the age of 75. At the 1968 Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Julian Bond became the first African-American nominated for U.S. vice president by a major political party. But he had to withdraw his name because he was just 28 years old, 7 years too young to hold the second highest elected office. If you want to see our hour special, Remembering the Life and Legacy of Julian Bond, visit democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield, Nermeen Sheikh, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Sneed Martinez, Honey Massoud, Juan Carlos Davila, Pedro Rodriguez. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Today is August the 21st, 2015. If you're listening on the podcast, it's obviously, it could be slightly after the show airs at 2 p.m. every Friday, since we're on from 1 to 2, and the podcast is created automatically on our server from the live stream at 2 o'clock. So maybe you're catching it later on Friday, and it still is August the 21st. But if not, just remember that maybe the stories have become different as more information or as events change between the time that I speak them to you and the time that you're actually listening. So always remember there could be a time delay and a correction may be necessary. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you. I'm station advisor here at WHFR.FM, celebrating our 30 years broadcasting on the air, non-commercial, independent, all volunteer student and alumni staff. It couldn't possibly work, could it? Yes, it has for 30 years. And we're very happy that Henry Ford College allows us to do our programming the way we wish. Never interfered in 30 years, but we try to be responsible. In fact, I challenge some of the commercial stations everywhere to be as balanced and as responsible as we are. But this show is made up of not just local news, but also alternative viewpoints. That means we actively try to find ideas that are not spoken very much, but have some credence. That's to help you decide. You decide. Okay. Very important to have a lot of points of view and then probably some time to reflect, and then you'll make the better decisions on things that matter. We're going to have a great show today, all kinds of different stories that we have lined up. One of them is truly life and death story about an event that could be catastrophic and could happen right in this area unless we speak out, unless we do something about it. And of course, as they do in commercial media, I'm going to save that story for a little bit later. I think we have a few minutes time. Wouldn't it be funny if something happens before the end of the show and it's too late to no, it won't be that way. There's a deadline coming up in September for some action that I think all of us responsible people in this area will want to take to preserve our environment, our lives. Is that important? A lot of these stories are, but a lot of them have a little bit of, time delay on them. Things will not impact everybody completely forever. But other stories like this one is extremely, extremely important. So I'm sure you're going to be listening and taking notes if needed. Get your paper and pencil handy, folks. But let's, first of all, as we do, go over the newspapers that have been published so far in the Dearborn area. We look at the Press and Guide and the Times Herald, and we have these stories to share with you to start with here on our program. Okay. I'm grabbing the Dearborn Press and Guide from last Sunday, August the 16th. Top story literally on the first page is about Dearborn Heights. Five residents seek three city council seats. Yeah, this year is not going to be a big year for elections. It's obviously not a presidential election year, not this year in November. It's going to be next year in November. There's not any primaries that I know of, but there actually is a council race going on in Dearborn Heights. The candidates are Ned Apigian, Raymond Muscat, Wasim Dave Abdallah, Lisa Hicks Clayton, and Troy Brown. Two of the candidates, Apigian and Link Hicks Clayton, are hoping to return to their seats on the council. So they're incumbents, folks. But that doesn't mean they're good or bad. But you should have, if you've been paying attention out there in Dearborn Heights to what's going on at the council, then you already know what Ned Apigian and Lisa Hicks Clayton have been saying and doing for the last 2 years of their term. So it's some of the unknown people that we don't know about, and that's what I'm going to take a little bit of time here. It's an excellent story. Debania Seaton wrote this, special to the Press and Guide, which means she's a freelancer that they're paying 50 cents or something to do this report. But it's a very good background piece on the five candidates. Again, five candidates for three seats. Now, just because of name recognition, usually incumbents have a tremendous advantage because a lot of people vote on name recognition. They don't know anything about the candidate, but they've seen that name somewhere before, and that means they're probably better than the names that they haven't seen before. Now, that's not a good way to vote in a democracy, I don't think, at all, but that's what a lot of people do. Just saying, okay? Learned that in my political science class in college, okay? So the story continues for the people that you haven't heard of before on page 4A of last Sunday's Press and Guide. Here's Raymond Muscat. That's M-U-S-C-A-T, 61 years old, been a resident of Dearborn Heights for 50 years. Graduated from Crestwood High School in 1972. He attended a Henry Ford Community College also, yay, and completed a Ford apprenticeship. We're Henry Ford College, you know, or that's where the station is based, so just saying. After 42 years of service, Muscat retired from Ford Motor Company as a repairman and builder of machinery. So he's married, has three children, three grandchildren, with another on the way. That's always used as part of your resume. I don't necessarily know what that means other than you may have some direct or at least indirect experience with the public schools in that area. Okay? Just because you choose to marry or choose to procreate, to me, does not mean that you're going to make a good city council candidate or any other political candidate. I don't think it's required, but everybody always puts it down there, and that's fine that he has done that, and that fits a traditional pattern. Okay. Muscat said that his role in the community includes being a member of the Knights of Columbus, attending St. Linus Catholic Church, and caring for the elderly. Before he began his campaign for office, Muscat had been attending council meetings for 12 years. So he kind of knows what they've been doing there. He said he's running because he cares about the city and believes it has regressed from when he grew up, and he would like to see more transparency from government officials. Does that mean you want to see right through them? No, obviously he's talking about honesty, complete honesty about their policies and their positions and their actions. I'm not sure how he'd bring that about. I know that I've commented in the past on this show and to city officials over there when I've interviewed them, always brought this up. When are you going to put more information about, you know, recent issues of Dearborn Heights on your website? Even the minutes or a video of the last city council meeting out there. When are you going to do that? And I haven't checked in a while, but it seemed like they were not moving in that direction. So that's one way to be more transparent is to get the record of the meetings, and especially a video, I think, would be the best way to go there, with good audio, of course. And I'm not sure what other things he thinks are being kept from the public. But that's Raymond Muscat. Another non-incumbent is Wasim Abdallah, whose nickname, he goes by the name Dave. That's in quotes. I'm not sure why he feels that's necessary, but he's lived in Dearborn Heights for 15 years. He's 49. And he's lived in the Dearborn Heights area for over 40 years. He attended Fortson High School in Dearborn, earned a dual degree in marketing and finance at the University of Michigan, Dearborn. And he began a career in real estate with Century 21 in 1989. He was awarded number one real estate agent in the country by Century 21 at one point. I'm not sure which year that was, whether it matters. Abdallah says he's involved with the Dearborn Heights Raiders football team, as well as volunteering at different organizations and helping teens. He's worked with the city regarding real estate and housing, as well as being involved with the Michigan Taxes Board of Review, Governor Snyder's Middle Eastern American Affairs Commission. So he was appointed by Governor Snyder to that. And as president of the Board of Realtors, that's distinguished, of course. He is married and a father to three children. He said that all of his family lives in Dearborn Heights, and he has the endorsements of other politicians, which is unusual. Not always done, folks. But in this case, he's got the support of Senator Dave Kinesick, who is now a Dearborn Heights senator to Lansing, and also Mayor Dan Poletko. And he's also mentioned issues of city regulations and home value. So why would these people recommend him? He could have a future in politics beyond the city council, perhaps. Dave Kinesick, a Democrat, is recommending him. Dave might know him because he had, he's been representing that area as a representative, as well as now a senator. I think he might have met him at a Democratic Party meeting. Just because he was appointed by, Governor Snyder to a commission doesn't mean he's a Republican. It just means he's a known significant member, and again, head of the Board of Realtors, in that community of Dearborn Heights community. And so that recognition, that position alone, I think, might get the governor's attention. Of course, he mentions issues of city regulations and home values, since he knows about home values because of his background in real estate. So he says he cares very much for the city, direct quote, wants to give back to the city and the country. Because of my experience in real estate, I can implement rules and ordinances to increase property value of homes in the city in terms of safety and cleanliness. Okay. And the last candidate that you haven't heard the name of out there in Dearborn Heights is Troy Brown. And we'll skip past the basics. It really, age doesn't matter. As long as, you're going to do the job. As long as you have the energy to do the work. And I assume that people that signed his petition felt he had, the desire, the energy to do the work. So other than that minor health issue, I'd vote for Jimmy Carter again, even though he's very, very sadly now been diagnosed with brain cancer, apparently inoperable at this point. Right up until the end, I bet he's going to be one of the smartest, best politicians that we have. So even health doesn't necessarily make that much difference, or certainly age doesn't by its own sake. So here's what Troy Brown said. He said, when it comes to political goals, he doesn't consider himself, quote, a complex person, unquote. And he says, quote, I don't believe the current government is collectively for the people and by the people. I'd like to change that one council member at a time, unquote. And of course, I'm not sure what he means by that. All the council people who are there are elected by votes. I think. Is he saying that the past elections had their ballot stuffed, ballot box stuffed? There was illegal voting going on? I don't understand what he means that they do not have a council that is for the people and by the people. For the people could mean something about the issues. Maybe for the people rather than big business or the rich? That's becoming a known division in our society. It's a fact, in fact. And, but by the people, I think he's saying he will do his best job he can to represent all the people, or at least a majority that talk to him, in Dearborn Heights. He went on to say that he recognizes specific issues that still affect the city, such as the 2014 flood, and he can represent Dearborn Heights as a whole with no agenda outside of serving the people. One of the first actions he would take if elected, so here's an agenda, is to have simplified and transparent reporting on all financial and accounting records, as well as maintaining and improving the city's standard of living. Okay. So that's Troy Brown. So three candidates, and I bet one of them is going to be elected, at least. Now, it's possible that an incumbent would not be reelected. But as I said, a lot of people who don't do their research, they vote on the basis of who they remember, and they don't really remember anything specifically, but that's the basis that they're working on. Mm-hmm. So, as I said, Raymond Muscat, Wasim Abdallah, and Troy Brown will be in the ballot this November for the third seat, at least, if not maybe three of the five seats, or all three of the seats that are available to fill up the Dearborn City Council. So hopefully you folks out there in Dearborn Heights, you're all registered to vote if you're of appropriate age, right? Mm-hmm. You got to do that at least by early October if you're not registered yet. And why not? Why not vote? How bad could it be for you to express your opinion and help change the future by the outcome? That's what I think. Okay. And by the way, all the opinions expressed on this show, mine and perhaps others that might come along the way before the end of the show, are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, administrators, or anyone else, or Board of Trustees members. But we thank them again for their continued support and respect. Just a reminder, we made a big deal about it last week. Dearborn Recreation and Parks has a 5-year plan, and they want input from the public by September 9th. Now, on September 9th, as we said, there's going to be a public meeting in Dearborn, probably at the City Council Chambers in the Dearborn Administrative Center. But even if you go to that, your input has to be in writing. Writing. It has to be submitted as a written comment. And this affects Parks and Recreation, or Recreation and Parks in Dearborn, as we call it, 5 years, the next 5 years. This is allotment of money and personnel and new projects, old projects. I'm sorry to say I haven't seen it yet. It is available not on the City of Dearborn website, amazingly, but according to the story last week, it's on the website of the Dearborn Center. Yeah, that's right. So you should try to read it, though. And I'm still waiting for a story from a real reporter. And you say, well, Koronik, you're a reporter. No, I read the stories I see. I do some critical thinking about them with you on the air about what information is there and what isn't there. And yes, I have a little bit of time, but not the time a professional who's paid for their time would have to read through the entire 5-year plan and explain it in detail, pros and cons. I think that's the job of one of our newspapers, and I'm still waiting for either the Dearborn Press and Guide or the Dearborn Times Herald to actually make that assignment. Maybe to one of their part-timers, of course, but pay them good. Pay them for the research time, the time to read the thing, and list pros and cons, and then get some opinions. Where do our current city council members stand on some of these things before we get to that September 9th meeting, before we get to a vote, a final vote on it? What does the mayor say? Well, obviously, the mayor helped draw it. It's his administration, so he's behind it, I'm sure. I'm not saying there's anything strange going on there, but it's pretty important. 5 years into the future, that's going to affect us. So September 9th, that's the end time. That's 3 days after, September 7th is Labor Day. And so the 9th is a Wednesday, I believe. So by all means, that's unusual to have a meeting on Wednesday in the city of Dearborn. Well, okay, I'm going to pull my day planner out right here, right now. I'm doing research, except it's during the show. Okay, September, yes, the 9th is a Wednesday. Okay, but try to make input to that. That's not the life or death issue, but that will affect you and others in Dearborn for the next 5 years if it passes with some things in there you don't like. Or if you do like. Okay, moving on to the Dearborn Times-Herald from this Wednesday. An interesting, we were talking about the city council, and just happened that they did a story, their head story, it's a council, and they're referring to the Dearborn Heights City Council, calls for a sturdier tree ordinance. And here's the story. City Councilman Ned Apigian, who is one of those five running for re-election, got his name in the paper, oh boy, for good name recognition for the fall, said that seeing five-year-old trees being cut down in the city's Military Hill subdivision without permits led him to call for strengthening the city's tree protection ordinance. Here's a quote from Apigian. One of the homeowners decided to cut down five legacy trees, which take three lifetimes to grow. He said this at the council's August 11th meeting. Something needs to be done about this. The city's tree protection ordinance said that no person shall remove a tree or trees or cause a tree to be removed in the city without a tree permit issued by the Public Works Department. Wow, that's cool. That's right. Yeah, we don't know how important trees are to us, folks. We don't realize it every day. And we need more of them because we're killing a lot of them, too, with acid rain from our factories and our car exhaust and... of course, chopping them down for newspapers and writing paper and so on. But I wonder if Dearborn has that. You can't remove or cause a tree to be removed in the city without a tree permit. It also states that a permit is required for the removal, relocation, or destruction of any tree, as well as the construction of any structure. Continued on page 8A. Depositing of any materials, land clearing, grubbing, or grading within the drip line of any protected tree. Wow. I think that's really great. Again, trees are our friends. In fact, if corporations can be people too, let's make trees people too. I think we should, yes. Maybe citizen concern can bring pressure on this council, says Apigian, to make some action to fix parts of the existing ordinance, which is not worth the paper it's written on because it doesn't seem to do any good, unquote. Councilman Joseph Kosinski also agreed with Apigian. He says, I support what Councilman Apigian is suggesting. I think the great difficulty is not so much the ordinance, but that there is a flurry of activity not only in tree cutting. And I ask, why? Why, folks? Why is there a flurry of tree cutting? But other activities that sidestep the requirements of permits. Kosinski suggested adding staff to be on call from Thursday evenings to Monday mornings to report activities that are performed without permit. And that the reason for that, folks, is that the city of Dearborn Heights closes, not just for the weekend, but also for Fridays. And so he's saying there should be some staff there that somebody could call to report a tree chopping or cutting or moving. Apigian plans to organize a meeting at the Carolyn Kennedy Library within the next 2 weeks. He says, hopefully I can get a couple of homeowner associations to be interested. Military Hills Homeowner Association officials also voiced their concern to Apigian. I'm going to begin with the Military Hills Homeowner Association because they're the ones that seem to be so concerned about it. They talked to me about it personally, and maybe we can get the ball rolling and solve this problem. Unquote. Those concerned about tree cutting ordinance can call Apigian at 313-585-6500. To leave a message for a notification when the public meeting is scheduled. So, by the way, that is Ned Apigian's cell phone number. Yeah, you got one of those nice, easy-to-remember ones. But you can call him and leave a message about when that public meeting is going to be scheduled in Dearborn Heights and if you can attend. It's for the future, of this planet, folks. We have to be concerned about the future of trees. Just one out of many things, but the future of trees is what I say. And so that Opinion phone number again is 313-585-6500. Also in this paper is a story on the front page. Dearborn to home Allen Park prisoners. Cities of Dearborn and Allen Park have reached an agreement to have a Dearborn Police Department house Allen Park prisoners. So Allen Park prisoners coming to Dearborn. The Dearborn City Council passed a resolution during its August 11th meeting. City authorized the mayor and city to enter a lease agreement with the city of Allen Park for the use of lockup space at the Dearborn Police Department. Allen Park will pay Dearborn $27 a cell per day, including the cost of food, with additional fees assessed when appropriate. That comes after Allen Park moved its police department and city hall operations to a new facility July 9th. They're now in a different building, and their previous city hall was too big and needed too much repair, and it was beautiful. It was right on Southfield Expressway as it sort of turned the corner into Allen Park. But they're out of that now, and so it's just not a good facility for housing prisoners anymore. So they don't have any jail cells, I guess. So that's the problem there. However, if you turn to, just to show you why you need to subscribe to both papers, in the Dearborn Press and Guide, from Wednesday, the headline, and the headline is not written, remember, usually by the writer of the story. The headline is, at the top of the first page, city's prisoners will go to Allen Park Jail. The subtopic, officials agree on temporary lease. Well, that's wrong. I mean, yeah, Allen Park's prisoners will go to Dearborn Jail. So whoever did that, now the story is correct. That's Jenny Kalish. Says the Dearborn City Council unanimously approved a lease agreement on August 11th with Allen Park to house the city's prisoners on a temporary basis. Which cities? After rejecting a merger of jail operations with Melvindale in April and moving soon to a new municipal complex that has no jail facility, Allen Park officials have been seeking a temporary solution for housing city prisoners. We have some room in the Dearborn cells, said Dearborn Councilman Tom Tefelski. So we worked out an agreement. But I have to admit, if the person writing the headline there had only read the first paragraph, Dearborn City officials unanimously approved a lease agreement on August 11th with Allen Park to house the city's prisoners on a temporary basis. The reference to which city is involved there, it makes it confusing. You would think to be Allen Park. So that's a reference problem. Okay, it's really by the writer, Jenny Kalish. Nope, it isn't on her base, but somebody misread it, okay, because that reference of city goes back to the previously mentioned Allen Park. So it's Dearborn that's going to house the Allen Park prisoners, and they're going to pay us for it. So that's okay. It's just that I'm just saying, do you read a paper at all, or even go over headlines of stories on the internet? That's not enough, because the headline could be totally opposite. In this case, it's a totally opposite point that's being made about what's happening. So got to read a little more of these stories. Always read it all the way through if it's of interest to you, because sometimes the biggest details are at the end, but sometimes there are also some things left out. A couple times a year I have to call the newspapers myself and talk to the reporters and say, what's really going on here? What's happening between the lines? There seems to be something left out or something that contradicts something else. I can tell what happened here because they have two papers, and the majority of the story in the Press and Guide is correct, but the headline is definitely opposite. Shame on them. Okay. Also, just a reminder from Dearborn Heights, Dearborn Press and Guide, excuse me, about the Dearborn Shelter Adoption Event, August 22nd, and that is tomorrow, of course. That's going to be, again, they have too many cats. They have had to acquire 29 cats from just one house in Dearborn, And some were sick and ill, but they've been treating them, but they just have too many in their facility. But they have all different kinds of cats and dogs, wonderful pets. And before school starts, they'll be glad to help you enlarge your family. And believe me, there's nothing like a pet to, I think, help educate a young person about responsibility and regard for others. Taking care of a pet is a job, and not all families and not all ages of children can handle some pets, in some cases any pets. But go and talk to them. They're going to have a tent in the parking lot in front of Home Depot at Fairlane Green. That's not Fairlane Town Center. That's the Allen Park Shopping Center that's called Fairlane Green. And that's 10 to 4 tomorrow. And I'm sure they're making some special deals. There's some adoption specials, okay, in terms of reduced cost and special giveaways. And also, they're going to be able to purchase Fido Bakery treats for their canine best friends. So, maybe your vacation is done now and getting back to a regular schedule, and you can start accommodating a pet that needs a home. Dearborn Animal Shelter, great people. All right, this is the new WHFR Journal. Jay Koronek with you today, August 21st, in the studio live. And we're going to be back with many more stories here after a couple of comments. Let's see. Well, what's the update on the roads in Michigan? Well, here's Jack Lessenberry and his commentary about what happened yesterday in the state of Michigan. WHFR.FM station really making waves.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Contrary to what you might think, it's not true that our government in Lansing can't do anything. Why, just yesterday, the governor reappointed four members to the Michigan Carrot Commission, and the State House of Representatives unanimously voted to retroactively recognize last Sunday as Airborne Day, whatever that means. It's just that state government can't do anything meaningful. Yesterday, one more attempt at trying to fix our dreadful roads fell apart, both because of ideological blindness and common sense. The latest idea was to come up with $1.2 billion a year for the roads by raising $600 million in new revenue and cutting the state's general fund by the same amount for the foreseeable future. However, there are more than a dozen Republicans who've taken a pledge never to raise taxes for any reason, no matter how great the need. And to his credit, Governor Rick Snyder got into the act, recognizing this was far too great a cut to the general fund. That would have almost certainly done terrible damage to education and foster care and whatever social programs have survived after years of tax and budget cuts. The governor thought more new revenue had to be found, but the ideologues were never going to go for that. This meant that any plan would need a lot of votes from Democrats. Democrats, understandably, had conditions. The health insurance claims assessment needs more money to sustain Medicaid spending. Republicans weren't willing. They also wanted Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff to give up attempts to repeal paying prevailing union-scale wages for state construction jobs. Meekhoff would no more do that than a Muslim would give up the Koran. So, eventually, the conference committee gave up on its efforts to get a road bill that might pass. Ironically, if they'd reported out any bill, it would have looked remarkably like Proposal 1, loaded down with other stuff. So once again, the gang who can't shoot at all failed to make any progress on the issue that voters care about most. It's tempting to wish that some billionaire would appear and lead a free spending effort to recall every member of the legislature. But there's another solution. We should outlaw the words tax and revenue increase on pain of death and talk about user fees. I say, pass a bill saying Michigan is going to assess a new 30-cent-a-gallon user fee on every gallon of gasoline, all of which has to go to fix the roads. This would totally solve the problem and be barely noticed. After all, the price at the pump has varied by as much as $1.50 a gallon since January, and it's still $1 less than it was 8 years ago. Even doctrinaire conservatives usually accept user fees for things like hunting licenses. Well, that's what this would be. A solution that is simple, easy, and for once, right. By the way, I'd pay far more than most. I drive more than 30,000 miles a year, but I'd still end up saving money with better roads. And Michigan would again find it easier to attract new business. We desperately need our lawmakers to do the right thing.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's political analyst.
And as we interviewed Democratic Representative to Lansing from this area, George DeRaney, just a couple months ago at the Dearborn Farmers and Artists Market, had a nice sunny day out there, as you know, that's what he's in favor of, a user fee. He said it would cost, and that's where Jack comes in with the 30 cents a gallon extra. That may seem like a lot to some people who are buying gas, but as he said, the price has gone up and down like a dollar and a half. You won't even notice 30 cents one way or the other. But in fact, the average driver, and I'm not sure that's 15,000 miles or what, but George DeRaney said the average driver, that's going to come out, that increase is going to come out to only $50 more a year. Okay? $50 more a year. That's 10 lattes at Starbucks, if you're into that. $50 a year to fix the roads now and forever. Now, I hope a couple things also happen, as most people do, is that they want to get warranties on this work. They want to put competitive bidding in there for this work, but they want to put warranties in and as a requirement, and they want to go to what's called, as I know now, version 2, that is a higher quality of road building, so that there won't be so many roads falling apart so quickly, and it's going to be better use of our money, more efficient use of our money, even though it's, I think they say it's 15% more up front, but eventually it'll be 25% less repairs per year after a couple of years. So I think we want to see those changes in our road building plans. But the user fee, that's it. It's just that simple. Okay? And if you want to give some credit to people who are poor on their taxes, then increase the earned income tax credit back to where it was. Thank you, legislature, for a couple years ago cutting it to almost nothing. Because poor people, they don't really need any extra help, right? No. Well, it's their fault, right? That's what you believe? Is that what you cut it? That's crazy. Crazy. And there's things like user fees on gasoline, since we don't have good metro transit in the Detroit area, that is one of the problems, along with ridiculously high auto insurance costs. Ridiculously high. I mean, maybe mayor of Detroit, Dugan, oh my gosh. Well, I live in Dearborn. We're so far away. I don't remember his name. But he has a plan for what's called D-insurance, Detroit insurance, insurance that would just be of significance to the people in Detroit. So if you live in Detroit, it's kind of like redlined, and oh my gosh, you can't get anything, any car insurance for a decent price, even though you're desperate for transportation. And unfortunately, the redlining affects me. I live in East Dearborn. Shame on me. Okay, which borders on Detroit, and apparently, I'm redlined too. My daughter was living in East Dearborn and then moved to Allen Park. Just did a story about Allen Park. All of a sudden, her car insurance goes down 40%. And she's not really that much further from Detroit, finally. But Allen Park is not redlined. So if D insurance goes through and Mayor Dugan, gets it passed, and I hope he does, could that D insurance also go for Dearborn? The D stand for Dearborn, please? Because that would be crazy if I have to pay this fantastic surcharge and everybody in Detroit pays, what they should be paying, an awful lot less. So that auto insurance issue, that's affecting the poor horribly too. Just another example of that. Well, okay, I won't make you wait till the end. It's about 38 minutes into the show, but here's the story that matters the most to all of us in terms of our health and safety. This is a life or death story, and here is the report from yesterday from Michigan Public Radio.
This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. Ever since word broke that Ontario Power Generation wants the government of Canada to go ahead and give a green light to build an underground storage site for nuclear waste less than a mile from Lake Huron, Michigan's representatives on Capitol Hill have been mounting a constant effort to keep the facility from being built. The latest salvo comes now from Congressman Dan Kildee, who is with us now. Congressman, we know now we're at the point where the Canadian Environmental Minister is going to decide the fate of this underground facility at Kincardine, Ontario. What is your latest initiative?
Well, our effort now is to get citizens engaged. We've raised this at the level of the U.S. Congress. We've introduced two different pieces of legislation. One, actually, I'll introduce in a couple of weeks to deal with this. But we know that the most important voices are the voices of the people of our state. And so we're asking them, if they are concerned about this, which obviously I think they should be, to write to the Ministry of the Environment in Canada and simply ask them to do that which they have yet to do, and that is consider another site for this nuclear waste, which will be radioactive for 10,000 years. Just look for a different site. I think it's a pretty simple request. And if the voices of the people of Michigan are heard, and our friends to the north, our neighbors, are listening, I think they'll pay attention.
The deadline for this is what?
Well, December 2nd is the date that the Ministry of the Environment has set as the deadline for them to make a determination on this question, which is interesting because initially it was supposed to be this summer, but the question is so contentious in Canada, not just here in the U.S., but in Canada, that the Ministry of the Environment decided to hold off until after their national elections that are taking place this fall because they didn't want to see this issue become politicized. Well, you know, that's an indication that there is not broad support for this, even on their side of the border. It's not U.S. versus Canada question, and it's not a Democratic or a Republican issue. My legislation has equal numbers of Democrats and Republicans as co-sponsors. So this is one of those times when our interest and our obligation to protect the Great Lakes transcends our time on this earth, and we ought to be thinking about generations to come. And if we do, we know we would never put nuclear waste less than a mile from the greatest freshwater source on the planet.
Congressman, I have to wonder, can you or have you or any other members of Michigan's delegation on Capitol Hill asked for a face-to-face with Canada's environmental minister?
Well, we have asked, and I've had discussions with representatives of the Canadian government. Interestingly, I'd asked for a meeting with the ambassador and haven't been able to get that. I have taken to communicating with an ally on the Canadian side, and that's a member of Parliament, a gentleman by the name of Brian Massey, who represents the Windsor area. So the Canadian government, they get where we're coming from on this, but we have not had the kind of access to their government. Of course, they see a member of the United States Congress. Their first instinct, perhaps, is not to engage. And that's why we feel that the voices of the people of our state, while our voices may be more well recognized, the voices of the people of the state in large numbers could be a more effective tool than political figures on our side of the border.
So bottom line, by September 1st, you're saying people in Michigan who care about this issue need to write to the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency. Can they also be emailed?
They can email, and if they go to my congressional website, they can go to the statement that I just recently released, and they can either write a letter and send it or send an email. But I just think a letter makes a difference.
Congressman Dan Kildee, Democrat from Flint, with the latest in the ongoing effort to shut down plans to build that nuclear waste storage site underground less than a mile from Lake Huron. Thanks so much, Congressman.
Thank you very much.
And that's a report from Michigan Radio out of Ann Arbor. From just yesterday, okay? Now, for those on the podcast, I'm going to actually give you the address. Again, we're talking about a written letter saying that you are against Canada's plan to build a radioactive waste storage facility near Lake Huron. And you have to write to the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency by September 1st. That's coming up. In the next week, you got to do it. So that's CEAA, Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency, Ontario Office, 55 St. Clair Avenue East, room 907, Toronto, Ontario, M4T, This is their zip code stuff. Okay, space 1M2. Now, if you'd like to hear that again, you have to get to the podcast. But you can also go to U.S. Representative Dan Kildee, that's K-I-L-D-E-E, his website, and you can get that address from him. And I tried to go to the website of the CEAA.GC.CA. That's the organization's website. And it wouldn't connect. Are they overflowing with comments from Michigan? Again, there's a lot of anti-nuclear waste storage people, activists in Ontario, believe me, and they are fighting it the best they can. The major problem, as I see it, in my humble opinion, after I've just read a few articles about the election coming up there this fall, Stephen Harper, the prime minister, is going for an unprecedented fourth term as prime minister, and he is probably the worst environmental issues leader in Canada ever. Talk about drill, baby, drill. He's the pipeline guy. There wouldn't even be the pipeline question in the U.S. if it wasn't for Harper wanting to dig into the tar sands. That's a whole other issue in Canada and Alberta, and pump them down here or pump them to Vancouver and send the oil to China or whatever. He wants to drill in the Arctic, you know, now that the ice caps are melting. He's just horrible things in terms of environmental rights, of clean air, clean water, future of mankind, using non-renewable resources like water. And of course, guess what? He's all for nuclear. Let's go nuclear. Let's go big. And that site next to Lake Huron has at least two active nuclear reactors and at least four waste sites already, just waiting to bubble up and seep through the ground to Lake Huron. And they want to build more and deeper and closer than the pools. They want to build them deeper and closer to Lake Michigan. And you know, we are in a small earthquake zone. The ground is not totally stable. Doesn't happen much around here. But a little shifting of the land next on the east side of Lake Huron, and it could just go right through these proposed waste facilities, along with the ones that are already there, that need a lot of electricity every day to keep them cool, keep the water pumping so that they don't sort of melt down into the environment. So it's just a terrible, terrible location. And these new ones would be even closer to Lake Michigan, Lake Huron. No, thank you. And so we have listeners in Ontario, Windsor, and so on, you should be very concerned about this. And I can't imagine why you would vote on an environmental record for Stephen Harper. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for the people. And that's my humble opinion. And you say, well, what about business? What about jobs? There's got to be another answer. There's got to be, for the good of this whole planet. Have you listened to Pope Francis recently? Okay. I know. He's only a pope. What does he know? Well, he knows a lot about the masses, the poor people, the majority. Okay. That was the life or death story. But coming up, a secondary story on that, I get a reminder here from the League of Women Voters indirectly, well, their secretary anyway, reminded me that Sierra Club, and I didn't get this, even though I'm a member of Michigan Sierra Club, but I didn't get this email, is that they would like, now, first of all, the main story is Representative DeRaney, who we mentioned earlier, he's going to have his usual monthly face-to-face the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. It's what's called a senior center, but it's located there. I think it's sort of the northeast corner of the building. The senior center at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center next Friday, August 28th, from 11 to 1 p.m. I can't make it because I'm doing show prep every Friday from those times for this show, this very show. But that's his usual time, the last Friday of the month, and And if you can make it over there, you might have other issues to talk to him about. But Sierra Club of Michigan would like you to tell him what you think about fracking and clean energy in Michigan, and that those priorities should be his top priorities. Probably also want to talk to him about the roads, but, you know, as a Democrat, we know he's already in favor of user fees. Okay? So, and fracking is already been banned in New York State by the whole legislature. Yes, they have Democrats in that legislature, yes. But nonetheless, I think their governor is Republican, isn't he? But that's what the people wanted. And fracking can be done kind of safely, but in general, most of the time, it's not done all that safely. And what it causes in terms of future damage under the surface to leakage of one thing or something else to destroy water and all kinds of stuff is terrible. You just don't want to do fracking anymore anywhere. That's my humble opinion on that, okay? But I know Governor Snyder doesn't go along with that. Still, Sierra Club says, let's stop it. And they're the biggest environmental group in the world, so they should know something about what's good or bad for the environment. Huh? Well, see what George Duraney has to say. That's next Friday at the Senior Center. That is the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, northeast corner, next Friday, August 28th, from 11 to 1 p.m. You can still have time, you know, leave exactly at 1 o'clock and turn on your radio in your car and listen to the journal. Don't have to miss anything. Get the live show. It's interesting also from Sierra Club that former governor of Michigan, he used to be sort of considered a pretty boy governor because he was young and very handsome years and years ago. He lost to Governor Engler, of all things. That was a big surprise for everybody, especially to him. Currently, former governor of Michigan, James Blanchard, serves as a board member for Enbridge Incorporated. They're the pipeline people pumping gas. Many places, like the big Kalamazoo River disaster of a year or so ago, that was Enbridge. It was their old pipeline that ruptured. And, of course, they got another one, and we did stories about this on this show, that it runs under, like, the Mackinac Bridge area, okay, between the Upper Peninsula and Lower Peninsula. And it's 61 years old. Is it good or bad? Well, Sierra Club is saying that if Governor Engler is there, and he's on this board, in fact, that is some sort of public relations board with the community, well, why doesn't he do something to make sure that this catastrophe is not going to happen ever again? Isn't he responsible, Sierra Club asks, for Enbridge shareholders now for making sure the company stops behaving badly? So we'll see what happens on that front. I would suspect that unless he gets letters, he's not going to change his position. They're paying him to be on that board, aren't they? I bet they are. I'm sure they are. So it's a great group, nonprofit group to be part of, by the way. They have also comments about our Palisades nuclear plant on the shores of Lake Michigan. That's an accident waiting to happen. And a few other things. I'm looking at their most recent newsletter here. And it mentions, stop fracking with our water. That's one of the current campaigns. And it doesn't mention in the newsletter about talking to Duraney about that. But everybody who's got any power in Michigan should be talked to about that. Well, it's coming up at 2 o'clock. We're going to start Highway 61 with Joanne. 4 hours of the best of blues, new blues, and local blues, and the best of indie blues any place around. And that's going to be a great show. And I'm going to be winding up here. What I'm going to do is, let's see. One final story, hopefully I'll have time maybe next week to talk about people running for presidential nominations. And, of course, the surprising people, Donald Trump, I'll leave my comments about him to some other time. But Bernie Sanders, of course, is getting huge crowds. Here's the very brief story in the New York Times Digest, which is a great email you can get every day for free from the New York Times. I think it's free. You have to know how to request it from their website. I do get a Sunday edition, so maybe I get it free for that reason. But almost no ads, and the stories are a little bit shorter. Bernie Sanders draws crowds to his revolution, as he calls it. As 1,800 Mad as Hell supporters jumped out of their seats and pumped their fists last Sunday, Senator Bernie Sanders of Vermont delivered the message they had come to hear. "We will, quote, give these guys an offer they can't refuse," unquote, he shouted, vowing to bust up the banks, bring down the billionaire class, and smash the political establishment. "So I welcome you all," he said, "to the political revolution of 2015, unquote. By overtaking Hillary Rodham Clinton in New Hampshire in some polls and drawing tens of thousands of people to his events on the West Coast, as well as thousands in Iowa and Nevada, Sanders, 73 years old, has captured the enthusiasm that fueled the 2008 Obama campaign. Unlike that of Obama, Sanders' appeal is less about oratorical lift and finding common ground than about the opportunity his campaign gives disaffected Democrats to vent their anger at the list of national ills they believe are caused by big business and the conservative allies and its conservative allies and have been left unaddressed by President Obama. If Clinton's pitch to voters is that she can make the system more effective, Sanders is arguing that Obama was naive to bother with a system that needs to be fundamentally changed. It's not a new message for Sanders, but the response is something unfamiliar. For someone who has always had a sweeping macro critique of America, having the largest crowds of the election cheering each description of income inequality, by the way, larger crowds than Trump is getting, and each proposal to eradicate it amounts to the validation of a career spent in relative obscurity. Quote, he's feeling the weight of his, wow, people really need this, unquote, Jane Sanders said after one of the seven appearances her husband made last weekend in Iowa. Yet when asked why Sanders was attracted to so many people, she added, because if not now, when? And if not him, who? Unquote. That's a good one. Anybody else appears to be the answer of the Democratic establishment. While the candidate's own staff sees the immediate challenges before them with a professional eye, Sanders admits to no doubts, and he treats any trespassers to a circle of believers accordingly. So, what I'm going to do to conclude the show is play a theme song that Donald Trump tried to use for his own campaign from Neil Young. And I hope you enjoy that. Again, he had to stop using it. Because, well, Trump wouldn't pay him royalties, and he just didn't want it, because he said he's a supporter of Bernie Sanders. That's what Neil Young said. I don't want Donald Trump using it. So maybe you haven't heard it recently, but remember, Neil Young is a supporter who's singing this song of Bernie Sanders. Thanks for listening to the new WHFR Journal. And here is Neil Young with Rockin' in the Free World, WHFR.FM.
Shoes. This is WHFR Dearborn. You are listening to The Magic of Radio.